Justin Boone from The Score comes on the show here. It's rookie draft season. It's also adaptation with the veterans in terms of the evaluation in Dynasty season. So you pretty much do all things Dynasty that I was seeing over there at The Score, which is awesome. You're the machinery. You're the engine. I don't know if they call you that, but you should definitely internally, you know, kind of value it that way. And what kind of stands out with your rankings? And I would ask you this, here's an open-ended thing, because a lot of times, you know, you put together your rankings and then it's always, well, if someone sees this, if they start asking me questions, what am I telling them to do, you know, in terms of a strategy session? What's kind of one of your big takeaways? We're now a week or two removed and action planning is starting. So with the first round or so of rookie drafts, what is kind of your target avoid of, if I were strategizing a perfect strategy for value for one of my listeners, one of my readers, what is it kind of telling them to do?
Well, thanks for having me on. We've been, you know, talking about, you know, I've been talking about having you on my show for a long time, and I haven't extended that invite. I keep telling our buddy Jordan McNamara that I'm going to have you on, and I haven't yet.
Careful with putting you on the broadcast. You're kind of
No, it's okay. We're going to do that in the next couple months. Yeah, we're gonna hold you to it. So thanks for having me on, man. This time of year is so fun. I mean, for me, Dynasty used to just be an off-season thing completely, because during the season, I was so focused on redraft and the weekly rankings and waiver wire and all that sort of stuff. And then, you know, my followers kept pressuring me to put out my trade value charts during the season as well. So now I find a Saturday once a month during the season to crank those out. But this time of year, it's great. This is the most fun. This is when the rosters kind of almost resemble exactly what we're going to see come the summer when training camps start. And for me, the rookie drafts, I love when they start right after the NFL draft. And that's what we're seeing right now. We're getting some ADPs and stuff. And I would say the thing that surprised me the most is some of the values for the running backs. I thought that I would be one of the highest people out there on Jonathan Brooks. He was my clear RB1 from the start. When I don't get a chance during the season to do all of the prospect profiles, you know, during the NFL season in the fall, but come January, I dive into all that stuff. And I loved Brooks. I thought he was the clear number one. And now I'm seeing that I'm not even high enough on him. And maybe that forces me to make a change here. And I got to move him up my rankings a little bit. I really like him as, you know, a late first round pick, but I'm seeing him get steamed up in Superflex drafts. I've seen him go like 106, 107 ahead of some of these quarterbacks, which is shocking to me and has led to me not really getting that much of him. Where Trey Benson, a guy that often goes, you know, early second round, I've been getting more of him when you go a little bit deeper into the Marshawn Lloyds and some of these guys that might take a little bit longer to get value out of them. Not that Trey Benson isn't that case as well, because we might see James Conner hang on for maybe one more season here and hold him off. But some of those other guys in that range, I'm not as high on Blake Corum as I've seen some other people, but Jalen Wright, you know, even though he is a day three guy, the fact that the Dolphins trade a third rounder from 2025 to get him, I think that's telling. That's kind of putting him in place to be that Raheem Mostert replacement. And then even when you go a little bit deeper, you know, the fact that a lot of these running backs fell to day three, it's unfortunate, and it means that the hit rate on these guys is going to be a lot lower. But still, we have a bunch of them. They're in position to be the number two back on their teams, whether it's Braylon Allen or Will Shipley could potentially win that role. I know Audric Estime is somebody that people are excited about. And I've seen these guys fall very, very far in drafts, often into the fourth round, where I'm super excited to grab them there. Because if they end up winning that number two job, Chad, you know this, when you get these backup running backs, if you can get that number two back and they're just one injury away, I'm willing to pay a third or a fourth to get that. And so I'm kind of surprised that those guys are falling as deep as they are in drafts, because I think they're great values over some of these day three wide receivers that we know are even bigger long shots.
Yeah, I think once you get beyond sort of the obvious quarterbacks and you're playing the premium, if it's super flex there, and then the big three wide receivers, I think Jonathan Brooks anywhere beyond that point is fine. You know, and his ADP, like you were kind of mentioning, he slipped into the early second round. You have him at 12, and he's available a lot. Looking at the spectrum curve of where he goes in drafts, 12, if you just sit there and draft by your board, he's going to be there a decent amount at 12 in Superflex. So like you were saying, you know, it gets him into the conversation to be a target player. I was going to ask you about JJ McCarthy versus Drake May. So that's a very tight zone. We typically see them go at most, maybe two picks apart, a lot of times side by side there in that mid first round. And I think, you know, set 107 ish or 108 might be the sweet spot of the whole first round, because you get to look at one of those guys a lot. Talk about, did you have McCarthy ahead of Drake May during the process? actually landing in Minnesota? Was that the key part of the equation? And ancillary, I'm kind of surprised the market didn't move McCarthy up more to confirm that really good landing spot once we got post-draft.
Yeah, pre-draft, it was May over McCarthy for me. I think talent-wise, May has the higher ceiling. But then when you see what happened in the draft, you see McCarthy go to this perfect landing spot, right? We've seen it's that system that Kevin O'Connell has. It's the weapons that they have there. We don't have to go over all of those guys. We know what they have in place. The offensive line's pretty good. And we see a guy like Kirk Cousins, who I don't think is the most gifted quarterback out there. And he falls into the system and he's putting up solid numbers every year. Plus, there are so many quality analysts out there. Like Thor Nystrom came on my show and just talked up McCarthy so much. He was extremely high on him. So when that happened, then when we see this landing spot come in, it's very, very close still between those two. I had someone on my show ask me yesterday whether Drake May could be this year's CJ Stroud, because he's going to a situation that we're kind of down on, but he does have the talent, and could he overcome it? I don't think that's the case. I think last year in Houston, you know, whether it was Bobby Slowick as the offensive coordinator or, you know, Nico Collins, Tank Dell turning out to be much better players than maybe we expected, I think the situation for him was pretty strong, where with the Patriots, they still have a lot of questions to be answered here, right? They get these rookie receivers. We have to see these guys produce. And I think, you know, expecting both of them to hit, whether you're looking at Javon Baker or Jalen Polk, I think that's a big ask that both those guys hit as rookies and have this offense really, you know, click right away with all these young players there. But May for fantasy, I think the rushing ability there is the one thing that maybe some people are overlooking a little bit, and that could bump up his fantasy value. But still, for me, I think McCarthy's in the safer spot. And I think based on a lot of these draft analysts feeling as strongly as they are about McCarthy, that led me to give him the slight edge when you pair that with the landing spot.
Yeah, I agree with you. Just go back one point about the running backs. It does seem like all those day two running backs, we got four of them, are all undervalued to some degree. I know you're a little cooler on Blake Corum, but he should walk into that number two job. Like, we shouldn't be surprised. Like, look what happened last year when Kieran Williams missed a month. They start going to the trash heap, bringing guys in off the street, and they're in a functional committee, Royce Freeman and others. And I just think, you know, pour one out for Ronnie Rivers, but I mean, Blake Corum's going to be in an optimal spot. I don't think Kieran Williams is going to get quite the elite workhorse role he had, because they didn't have, you know, comfort in the running back two plus last year. I think they're going to have a little more comfort, but the big thing is injury away. You know, we talk about that all the time. You might get lightning in a bottle for any amount of games this year with Corum being a top 10 back. And I think there's a little more complexity with some of those others from day three you kind of mentioned. But yeah, see, I wouldn't have guessed that Trey Benson would be undervalued. And can you unpack the Jonathan Brooks thing? Just one more comment on it, because he goes higher in the draft than everyone thinks. It must be an anti-Carolina thing, but then everyone gives Jatavion Sanders a pass for falling to day three. He lands in Carolina. People are fading Xavier Leggett as well as Jonathan Brooks, and they got round one pedigree and then top 50 pedigree for Brooks respectively. Very confusing with Brooks and a little bit with Leggett for me. And again, I wasn't a huge Leggett fan pre-draft.
I don't think Brooks went higher than I expected, to be honest. That was the draft capital that I was kind of baking in for him. I think if we didn't have the injury to deal with last year, I think he would have been a late first round pick. I don't think that, you know, he's not a Bijan Robinson type, but I think he deserved to be a late first round pick if we had seen him produce all season long this year. And yes, going to Carolina, it's a good spot in terms of the fact that he can rise up that depth chart quickly. At the same time, we're excited about Dave Canales being there. That offense has some hope now, but they still have a lot to prove as well. For me, the thing that's holding Brooks back just a little bit, and like I said, I've been high on him this whole process, the thing that's holding me back a little bit is that injury. Everyone's acting, and we saw the reports right after the draft, he's going to be ready in July. He's going to be ready for camp. But how many times do these guys have ACL tears the year before and they talk up a great game, everything's positive, but when it comes time to get cleared and actually get out there, they don't, or they're not 100% right away. And when you're talking about a rookie coming in, running back is one of those positions where they can hit the ground running. But he's a guy that comes in and maybe as a rookie misses some reps, needs a little bit more time. And at the beginning of the season, this team feels more comfortable having, you know, a 50-50 split with him and Chuba Hubbard. So everyone to me just seems like everybody else got on board with Brooks after the draft and because of that capital and everything that he got, and now have gone too far the other way where they're not thinking about the fact that he has this injury. Is he going to be the same coming off the injury? Everyone's just kind of expecting that, yes, he is going to be that player from day one, week one, he is going to be the starting running back. And for sure, that's possible. But I think it might be a little bit more of a slow burn at the start of the year. And then he starts to take over when he gets a little closer to 100% or back to form or whatever you want to call it. Because we know these guys coming off these serious knee injuries, they can get back on the field, but are they the same player as they were? Does that take a little bit of time to start to trust that knee again and all that sort of stuff? So that's kind of where I'm at with Brooks. Still very excited for him as a dynasty prospect, still very excited for him in these rookie drafts. But from what I've seen, maybe it's because I'm in a lot of analyst drafts, he's going way higher than where I have him ranked, Chad. Like you said, like he's normally there around the 112. You could get a decent amount of him. I'm not seeing that in any of my drafts. He's going like mid first round, ahead of that second tier of receivers, ahead of sometimes some of those quarterbacks like we just talked about in McCarthy and May, which is stunning to me.
Yeah. And I go back to two things. He's 21.2 years old for week one. So you got the time. Like he's way younger than all of those other day two running backs. So you've got time on your side. He's a well-balanced guy, shows some of that receiving upside. And typically round two guys, you don't see them peak. I always think of Nick Chubb, you know, laying waste to Carlos Hyde back in those Cleveland days where, and then you get shipped off. But typically it's like mid season in year one, whether you have an injury or not, that's when you start cresting. And that's when you start finding fantasy lineups and start dominating for teams at that point and then game on. But the age difference for me is critical, getting in the ground floor at 21, especially if you get that slow start, like you said, maybe September, October. Critical player, Michael Penix. So there's a lot that goes into this NFL-wise. Dynasty-wise, obviously, we're looking at a projected, you know, maybe multi-year wait. Obviously, things change, you know, if Kirk Cousins isn't ready, if we see great things out of Penix in the preseason. There's a lot of variables in this that can change the story. I would say, you know, you have him later in the teens, which means you're probably not, that's on the lower band of when he's available. So you're probably not going to, you personally get him much, or subscribers, listeners of you are probably not going to get him much. Can you unpack Penix being clearly lower than the other five quarterbacks, maybe the time factor involved, and just kind of how this plays out in your opinion as the asset?
Yeah, I mean, I was fairly low on him in the pre-draft process. I had him much lower than this in my rankings. I did not think that he was going to get that top 10.
So he's moving up to 18 is what you're saying.
Yeah, he moved up to 18 here. I was wrong in this one. I wasn't even believing some of those reports that he was going to go in the top half of the first round. I thought it would be a late first round pick or maybe even one of those situations.
Well, Nixon and Penix are both surprises. Their expected draft position was like late first, early second, and they both go top 12. Big surprises.
And I think with Knicks, that speaks to just the desperation at quarterback. Like, you know, the Raiders were kind of the last one standing there without a chair for a quarterback. And
isn't that crazy? They probably had a board and they're like, well, we're going to get one of the six. They had nothing. They're like, I guess Brock Bowers?
They certainly thought they were getting Penix or Knicks. Yeah. And then they had to come away with nothing. But, you know, we'll see. Everybody likes to joke that Tom Brady's going to end up being the quarterback there this season.
No, I don't 17 think that's going to happen. But... for Minshew Mania. Let's do this again.
Yeah, it would be great to see. You know, let's see Gardner Minshew start the season. Maybe he gets hurt midway through the year, and then Tom Brady comes in and saves the day. Regardless, we're going back to Penix here. From a real-life standpoint, I know everybody wants to jump on it and say that it's foolish. I get the logic. I don't agree with it, but I can totally understand the logic where you see a team like Green Bay go out and kind of have this success with quarterbacks year after year, and you're the Falcons, and you're division contender, potentially playoff contender. And now you feel like, you know what, Kirk Cousins, we got a contract that's probably going to have him there for two more years, even though it was a longer contract than that. And you figure, okay, we have an opportunity to get this guy that can step in. I get all of that. From a fantasy standpoint, I don't think he is the talent that, you know, is the top, you know, 10 pick. I don't think he deserved to go in that range. I think that does speak to that quarterback desperation around the league. So I think that was a bit of a reach. So I'm not, even though I moved him up, I'm kind of not giving him the value that you would normally give to a guy that would go in that top 10 range. And I think that's because you're going to have to wait on this asset. And we saw it with Jordan Love. And I saw leagues where Jordan Love got dropped after a couple of years. Right. And yeah. A lot of the super reports cheap. Yeah, didn't look great in the practices and didn't get a lot of opportunities on the field.
The reps of Michael Penix in the preseason are going to be so magnified of what do we think.
Under a microscope, absolutely. And Kirk Cousins, too. And I know already there's been some practice highlights of Kirk Cousins out there. Look, guys, he's fine. He's going to be okay. And I think because of that, and you'll see it with some other players, too, you know, running backs are going to have that opportunity potentially if there's that one injury to step up. Quarterbacks, the injury rate isn't as high for them. So are we going to see Penix out there in the next couple of years? Who knows? My guess is it's going to be 2026. So then, okay, let's look at him as a 2026 first rounder. That's kind of where I have him valued in my mind. That's kind of like that, you know, mid second round pick here. If I'm going to trade for a first rounder a couple years away. So I'm not really looking to get him. I hope that I have him ranked in a spot where the people who are following me probably aren't going to draft that much of him, unless you are in a complete rebuild. And if you're in a situation where you want to potentially lose this year and you're trying to tank and you go and get him and you kind of add him as a you know, future first round pick in that mindset, then that's fine. But for me, most of my teams, I'm trying to contend, or I'm right on the cusp of contending here and trying to win a title. And Penix to me just isn't going to help, even though that same logic, the Falcons thought was fine to go get him.
I do wonder the thing that we playing this out in my head, because you always think about timelines and action planning and what you might say in October, November. I do wonder. So if you draft him, let's say you're a good team and you're like, hey, I'm just going to take best pedigree available. You take him at 201, 202. You're like, all right, I'm in for this. You get to November and there's some teams falling out of the race in your Superflex league. And I do wonder, Penix would be the type of player they would want. Obviously, they want picks. But Penix would be the type of timetable where they go, I don't get points out of this. This doesn't hurt my draft position. And I'm getting something for the future. And I wonder if they're going to have a first round valuation just in their head or what they're actually paying for, where you're getting veterans, you're a contender, you flip that out, because Penix maybe from now till then doesn't lose value. I do agree with you that if we get an Aaron Rodgers type situation, Kirk Cousins playing at an elite MVP type level, Falcons look great, go into the playoffs, win a game there. And again, life is good. And they're like, maybe they're going to, you know, keep with Cousins beyond year two. Like, again, Packers didn't plan on that. But the point is, like you're saying, that decline erosion over time, I do wonder if you play that out of quarterback pedigree in this case versus, like, if you take some, you know, Ricky Pearsall, like, is he someone that has year three allegiance, you know, in terms of like keeping his value versus the quarterback? I do think it's gonna be a fascinating, we just don't get enough data points with this, you know, sitting quarterbacks. We had Jordan Love, we had Mahomes for 1 year, basically. We don't get a lot of this. We used to get a lot more. So I'm here for the story. I'm here for the dialogue. And frankly, I'm here to see, does anyone, you know, draft Penix at 201? And it's like, and then in season, they just kind of bail for like a later second equivalency in Superflex. And we're like, the discount's already here. I think it'll be very interesting.
I think there's going to be a window there for him. And I think we could see that window for a few of these players, like Ricky Pearsall and others, where these guys don't come out. Right. Maybe even going back to the running backs, like we're saying with the Jonathan Brooks, what if he comes out and it isn't just gangbusters right away from week one and he isn't 100% healthy and 100% the starting back? Then you might have that window to buy on a few of these players. So I would just keep that in mind.
Can you sell me, like, I've asked a few people on rookie rankings and it seems like everybody has AD Mitchell higher than I do. And so just to unpack one thing on why I have him lower, like, I can't imagine getting him in one league. So that's kind of where I stand, that he was the type of profile, boom bust-ish, you know, and those types of guys, Pearsall got round one, Xavier Leggett got round one, Mitchell did not. And life is different if you get round one versus round two. And the other part is he didn't like just miss, he missed it by a wide margin. You know, 2/3 of the league passed on him in round two. So it makes me wonder if anyone really had a round one grade on him. And so AD Mitchell goes to the Colts. I don't think it's a high flying offense and possibility there. Pittman's locked in. Richardson, we'll see what the upside he can unlock. So I was just not a big fan. And for me, it was going to hinge on round one. And like you said, with Penix, hey, I have to move him off a requisite level because he went this high. And AD Mitchell, April into May, it was kind of that way for me of, if he gets round one, he's going to be requisitely high, but he would be in probably the Pearsall zone. Otherwise, round two, I got to have him down there. And he turned out to be much higher in ADP. And again, you're kind of right in line with the market. Kind of sell me on him in that mid-second range.
So I really like the talent. And this is a situation where I'm sticking to that probably a little bit too much. And that's a spot where you can get yourself in big time trouble, kind of holding on to those priors pre-draft and not trusting that, like you're saying, the NFL, a lot of teams passing on him, that could tell you something about it. But at the same time, we saw these reports about him, about some of the off-field and personality stuff with him, about the health and all of that. And then his new GM, you know, Chris Ballard, comes out and kind of speaks against that. At the same time, I mean, maybe I'm just cynical, but I'm watching that press conference going like, you know, the Colts are probably the ones that leaked that information to get him to fall so that they could get him for this pick. But I like the player a lot. I think there is a massive range of outcomes from him being a true number one in the NFL. I think he has that ability to win on the outside, to be that guy, to potentially even be better than Michael Pittman. I think that there is a range of outcomes for him that ends in that. There's also one where he is kind of just the next Alec Pierce and doesn't really do that much and becomes an afterthought and the third receiver in that offense. So he's certainly a risky pick. I would say that about most of the receivers that are going in the second round, right? Even the guys that have the first round draft capital, the guys that snuck into the end of the first round, like Xavier Legette, these guys, they're not guaranteed, right? There are so many outcomes for all of them. So I'm taking a chance on my pre-draft evaluation for Mitchell that I really felt like he could come in and be a potential number one receiver in the NFL. And if he gets some of this other stuff sorted out, or if it was just overblown, like we've seen happen with a lot of prospects in the NFL as well, where these reports come out about them, not to link him to a guy like CJ Stroud, who, you know, CJ Stroud comes out and is a top five NFL quarterback basically right away. But we saw that test last year. It turned out that had a big impact maybe on what the NFL thought about him, that he fell one spot, and what a lot of fantasy managers felt about him. And he was often, you know, going off the board after Bryce Young and after a lot of players last year. So that's the case kind of for Mitchell to me, even though I'm acknowledging that there is a lot of possibilities here for him, and it's quite a boomer bust profile for sure.
Two more macro questions here, one wide receiver centric, and I kind of think of these what-if scenarios. So we had Ricky Pearsall, where he gets drafted in the first round, but we don't see Deebo Samuel or Brandon Ayuk move. The general response I've heard is to where would he get drafted if Ayuk was moved on Friday night after Pearsall was drafted. So Pearsall goes first round, Ayuk gets moved for like a second, a future second or something like that, and he's just not on the team. And where would Pearsall go? Almost unilaterally, everybody says first round of rookie drafts. So we're getting about a half a round discount because that hasn't happened ... yet. So that's kind of like a, you know, sliding door scenario of, doesn't that feel like it's coming? So you have Ricky Pearsall. Another scenario would be, well, how would Troy Franklin be valued if Cortland Sutton was traded? Now, he's probably less likely to be traded based on his contract situation, but that's a possibility. The other one that you're actually high on is Jermaine Burton. If T. Higgins in 12 months or less is not on the team, how does Jermaine Burton be valued? And I almost view your rankings as an assumption. T. Higgins will not be there soon at some point. He may play this year, but Jermaine Burton has the most incumbent chance to take full advantage of a T. Higgins absence. So those three players, I feel like their window of who's there right now and who wasn't moved, but maybe they tried to, it's a very interesting sliding door scenario. So you can pick one of those, three of those. It's kind of up to you. But those three wide receivers feel very interesting from a situational standpoint.
Yeah, Franklin, I'm punishing quite a bit for being a day three pick, just because, like we've mentioned already, the hit rate on those kinds of receivers and really all of the players that are going in day three is pretty slim. And he goes to a situation where you have Sutton there, you have Mims there, right? Mims was a guy that I think I valued more than Franklin coming out. So he still has a chance to produce, even though that first year didn't really do much, kind of got trapped behind some guys. And there was really strange comments from Sean Payton all year long about it, right? Oh, we're going to get him more work. Never really did. And now, okay, Jerry Jeudy's out of the way, so he should get his chance this year. So that Franklin, for me, it's really the draft capital that I bumped him down quite a bit. Pearsall, I think Pearsall is a great pick at the early second round. If people want to value him and reach for him in the late first, I'm okay with that. It's just a situation where, like we mentioned before, I think there's going to be a window to buy him at some point this year, because I don't think, and the team has come out and said it since the draft, that Brandon Ayuk, Deebo Samuel, they're not going anywhere. Deebo's contract isn't really great for that. I mean, Ayuk, it seems like it'd be quite foolish for them not to sign him to a long deal. He's a young star receiver. So I hope the 49ers keep him. So Pearsall probably will get his opportunity. Probably will be a year from now. I would think that Deebo would be the guy then that gets moved. And at that point, yeah, he could have the value. So if people are looking to get him in the, you know, mid to early second round, I'm all aboard that train. Late first, a little tougher for me just based on some of the other prospects that are available there. It's really no knock on him. It's more me liking some of the other guys better. And then Burton, there's a few more things to consider with Burton, right? Like there's a lot of negatives, a lot of off-field stuff, a lot of personality stuff that people have talked about with him. You know, changed schools a lot. There's a whole bunch of things there that I think you have to factor in and kind of put a little bit of doubt as to whether he can be that, you know, consistent producer, that starter in the NFL. Is he going to be a quality pro, or are some of those things going to catch up with him along the way? But T. Higgins, in my mind, almost certainly is going to be gone next year. I mean, they've come out and said that they're not really talking about a contract at this point. So he'll play this season. They'll make another run with Joe Burrow and the crew there. And then next year, to me, it really seems like Higgins will be elsewhere. And that means Burton is going to be in a perfect spot. He gets pretty good draft capital and is in an offense where he's attached to a quality quarterback. So he's exciting, but for me, end of the second round is where I'm kind of willing to take him because of some of those doubts that are out there about his profile.
Yeah, you said doubts. He also went in the third round. Let's not pretend if T. Higgins is gone next offseason, they don't go right back and go round one, round two wide receiver. That we see this time and time again, a guy gets overdrafted, over the top, even if they flash a little bit, surviving, that gauntlet of free agency in the draft next year will be key for Burton.
I think
even
that's
if he
a good thing. That's a good thing to mention with Franklin too, right? Like yeah. If Courtland Sutton ends up getting moved, let's say next year, if he leaves next year, are the Broncos going to just stand pat and say, all right, we have Mims and we have Franklin? No, they're probably going to go out and get somebody else to add to that room. So I definitely don't think there's a clear path for Franklin necessary to end up being the number one or even number two in that offense.
Last question, the day three running back bucket. I think it starts, you mentioned round three, round four, you can kind of live in that zone and super flex and draft a bunch of guys. I think Jordan and I, we had a draft with a bunch of late picks. We ended up with 5 day 3 running backs. That's just like, hey, we got chances. I always say a chip in a chair, of finding, that guy in the dark in the season that gets the starting role. I'm going to limit you in one capacity because the general consensus is the hot rod, the Ferrari, Jalen Wright, going to the racetrack offense. That's kind of low hanging fruit. A lot of people like that landing spot, and he's going generally the earliest of those guys. Sure. So what one or two guys would you like to highlight of the day three running backs outside of Jalen Wright of saying, I like the pedigree, maybe I like the fit here, and I could see things breaking right and they're good enough to take advantage?
I think there is a massive group, and I kind of alluded to it earlier. I think there's a huge group, and part of this probably comes down to a lot of my builds. Like in my builds, I'm spending up on receiver, I'm spending up on quarterback, sometimes on elite tight end, and I'm trying to just get as many roster spots as possible available for running back so
that's,
I can take
that
shots.
That strategy sounds familiar, Justin.
I have heard it from you guys. I've heard you guys preach it. Jordan's come on my show
What's your running back ratio?
It is very smart stats.
Yeah.
The next step after that I've taken to some really deep leagues is stashing a ton of backup quarterbacks because now that so many people are doing the running back thing, the backup quarterbacks are the one that sometimes you get that value pop up out of nowhere. So that's the next level one.
You're the only one kind of looking for the weak spot to get Blaine Gabbert in week 6 last year. You're like, oh, I'm in for this.
I'm in an extremely deep.
You were so excited
team.
About Carson Wentz going there this year. Like, is he available?
I'm in a really deep 14-team analyst league. Yeah. And a couple of years ago, I won the title just riding like the Nick Mullins of the world as my QB2 down the stretch. It was like each week a quarterback would get hurt. I'd pick that guy up because nobody wanted them. I'd play him, and somehow I ended up winning the title with them. So
the Superflex story Jordan and I have, the two quarterback mandatory story, is in that offseason when Geno Smith got the job, he was on the waiver wire of like a 40-man roster. We got him for free. I think Brock Purdy was on the waiver wire at a certain point. You want to talk about found money? You go to premium formats and you get guys like that, profiles that actually extend beyond just like this little fun window of a month. Man, they turn into actual, tangible, tradable assets. But back to your giant cupboard and war chest of running backs. Who do you like?
The last thing I'll say about the quarterbacks is in an analyst league that I just did a draft, I traded up in the late fourth round to get Drew Lock the other day. Veterans were available too, and Drew Lock, a lot of reports, maybe he could get a chance there. So yeah, that's a name to look out for. But yeah, going back to the running backs, it depends what you're looking for here. Like I have Ray Davis ranked the highest because I think he's going to step into that Latavius Murray kind of role in the Bills offense, be that power back, but he's certainly just an injury away guy. I don't think he's coming for James Cook's job by any means. And we can also bake in the fact that Josh Allen's there and he's going to take some of the rushing work and all that sort of stuff. So Ray Davis, an older prospect and a guy who's coming in who I think is going to have a role right away, be able to give you maybe some flex value, but is just sort of an injury away guy. The interesting ones are Kamani Vidal and Tyrann Tracy Jr., right? Because I think those guys have the potential to rise their depth charts this year. Yes, they're day three guys, but when you look at those depth charts, the Chargers, I'm shocked the way people are talking about that backfield. Like Gus Edwards is a solid back. You know, he could be that guy. I could see him be a Jamal Williams type this year where he scores a bunch of touchdowns, you know, doesn't have the biggest yardage totals, but gives you value that way. J.K. Dobbins is coming off a very serious injury. Is he going to be anything this year? Like people see the name and they get a little bit excited about it, but I'm not sure. And Dobbins is notorious for saying he's fine and he's going to be able to play. Remember what happened with the Ravens and did, you know,
this could be like Mykal Ashore though. Like he never really gets back and it's just a big tease. And in 2 years, he's not in the NFL, right?
I think that's a great example. And I think it's unfortunate because Dobbins had a chance to be a really good back in the NFL, but I'm very worried for him. So Vidal could be a guy that ascends that depth chart and gets into maybe a committee with Gus Edwards this year and gives you some value and kind of is one of those.
And Edwards doesn't catch the ball. So someone else is going to need to catch 30, 40, 50 passes. And Isaiah Spiller, massive disappointment. So there's not a ton of competition there.
Yeah. And I think people get very excited, whether it's, you know, right after free agency and they see all those names in the headlines or right after the draft and they see all those names in the headlines and they get very excited. We can't just assume that Vidal's going to be able to do this. We need to see him prove himself, but he's got a shot and that's what we're looking for in the fourth round.
I mean, you can get him, you don't even have to spend a third round pick sometimes, which is a dart throw. It's a waiver priority, right?
Seems like the third round in most of the leagues that I've been in, but yeah, the odd time you get these guys fall into the fourth. And then for Tyrann Tracy Jr., going to the Giants, I am a huge Devin Singletary fan. I think he is incredibly underrated, but he's not an elite back by any means. He's just one of those guys that kind of does everything pretty well. And, you know, coaches like him and he's going to be able to start the year as the lead back. But could you have an explosive pass catcher like Tracy kind of get out there and give them something more and emerge as the number two there and maybe eventually overtake Singletary? That's totally possible too. So I think there's a lot of value there. And then after that, I would kind of group all of those guys together where you look at like the Braylon Allen and Shipley and Bucky Irving and Estime, you know, all of those guys, I think have a shot to be the number two. They're not going to overtake the lead back in their backfield, but we know the value that you can have as a number two running back. You're one injury away. So to get those guys in the late third and the fourth round, I think that's really good value, and it's just a lot more interesting to me than some of the other picks in that range. I would throw Isaac Garendo in there. I mean, 49ers backs, a guy, you know, got a lot of speed. Could we see him rise up that depth chart with Elijah Mitchell maybe being on his last run as the 49ers backup? And they don't really, you know, Jordan Mason has flashed a couple times, but, you know, doesn't look that exciting. So could Garendo be the guy there and the future number two? I think that's possible. So anytime you could buy into that 49ers backfield and you can do it at this cost, it's probably a smart thing to do.
Love it. Justin Boone from The Score, where can folks find you? What are some of the cornerstone pieces of content that you'd like to highlight here from the previous weeks and this post-draft landscape that we have here?
Well, all my content's available for free over at The Score, so you can check out the website or, I think even better, download the app. It's the best sports app out there going, and not just because my content's on it, but the box scores and everything are the most efficient, the best ones out there. So definitely check that out. In terms of content, got all my 2024 redraft rankings updated, the rookie rankings like we're talking about today, my dynasty trade value charts that everybody gets on me to update all the time. Those are all updated right now, and I'll continue to update those, you know, once or twice a month as we go throughout the off season or whenever anything big happens. If we get some trades or something, I'll be all over that as well. And then the Score Fantasy Football Podcast, which I'm going to try to get you on chat hopefully soon here. Doing episodes right now a few times a week as we get closer to the season, we'll ramp that up. And then in season, it's 5 days a week that we're cranking those out, have guests on them. Sometimes it's me solo. Sometimes we do a mailbag like I did yesterday. But it's just a ton of fun, and what an awesome time of year here when we get to start, you know, really digging into what these rosters are going to be for this season now that we have a pretty good picture of what those depth charts look like, and we can really start to put the pieces together and get pumped up about the 2024 NFL season.
Thanks, Justin, for sharing your time and talents for the show. In this episode, I'm Chad Parsons. As always, never settle, refuse to be average, and keep building those dynasties.